Greetings to everyone, and again, welcome. I'll just briefly go over what we have scheduled for this evening, I guess. The theme is going to be Noah and the flood. And I guess kind of what brought that on was partly the amount of rain we've been having, but also I've been reading a lot about the Ark Encounter down in, is it Kentucky or Tennessee, wherever it is, where they're building that new Ark. The grand opening is tomorrow. They're, I guess, expecting lots of people to attend tomorrow. It's kind of a fascinating thing to me, just the enormous undertaking it was to do that. And so we thought it would be kind of fun and hopefully worthwhile to just use that as a theme. So we're going to take time for prayer requests and prayer here just in a little bit, so be thinking about that. Then we're going to have announcements, and I believe Walter here? Walter wants some time to elect a new Wednesday evening person. Then we will have a skit for the children. The rest of you may watch also. And then I'll have some commentary on Noah and facts pertaining to the flood. So at this time, we'll take your prayer requests. Thank you, Shane. And thank you, two brothers, for lifting your voices and praying. I don't know, is there another mic available for announcements? We'll take announcements next.
Had two requests recently. One is for a chest of drawers or a dresser, trying to help a single man to bring some order into his room. And so a caseworker asked, if we know of someone, let me know. Another one was a request, if you would like to teach a 72-year-old lady crochet. I think this is for the ladies, so. She said it's a very pleasing lady, but would like to learn to crochet to keep her active in her older years.
Okay, we're ready for the skit for the children, and I guess just a disclaimer, it's not very well rehearsed, and not all of the family is here, and so we took some liberties with that, as you may notice.
We're ready to do our skit slash play slash something, and I would like to stress it's a pretty low budget production, so... As such, some of our special effects might not be that special, so just use your imaginations, and yeah, I guess let's go up, and all the kids can come forward, either sit in the aisle or on our bench, that'll be empty too.
It was a sad time for God. Everywhere he looked, he saw hatred and evil filling the souls of the people on earth. He decided he needed to destroy evil by sending a flood.
You are the worst!
I don't like your face.
I hate you!
Arrgh. Boom, boom. No.
He needed to destroy evil by sending a great flood. Everything and everyone would be destroyed. This he told to the one man who was good and loved God. This man's name was Noah, and this is the story of Noah's Ark.
Noah. Noah. Who's that? Noah. If that's you, Shem, Ham, or Japheth, you'll be in trouble. I'm trying to work, and you should be too.
Noah, it's me, the Lord.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I thought it was one of those sons of mine having a bit of fun at the expense of their old man.
Noah, you know that we were talking about the state of the world. You know how bad things have become. My people have decided to go their own way and do their own thing, and they've made a right mess.
Yes, Lord, things are bad now.
Well, I've decided to stop it.
Lord, you are joking.
Do I sound like I'm joking?
Sorry. I know you wouldn't joke about something so serious.
I've decided what I'm going to do. Noah, I want you to build an ark.
A what?
An ark. It's a sort of a boat thing.
But I don't know anything about building an ark. A sort of boat thing.
No, Noah, don't worry. I'll give you full instructions, including materials to use and sizes.
And what do I do with it once I've built it? I live on the edge of a desert, after all. There's no water around here.
Just leave the water to me. Concentrate on what I want you to do. Take your family and two of every kind of animal and bird and put them in the ark.
If you say so. But my neighbors will think I'm crackers.
Trust me, Noah. Just trust me. Look, come and see me tonight as usual. We'll go through it all again. I'll give you all the details about it then.
Right, Lord. Straight after work as usual. See you then. Making an ark.
A what? An ark? What's an ark then?
Sort of a boat.
A what? Mumbling again.
Boat! I'm making a boat.
You're making a boat? Wait, here in your backyard?
Yes, that's what I said. A boat. Here in my backyard.
Hmm. Hey, Granny. Come here. Come here, look what Noah's doing.
What? What's he up to then? Move up. Let's take a look. What's he making, Eric?
I'm not sure I heard right. You better ask him yourself.
Right. Then Noah, what are you making?
Ark.
A what? I can't hear you. Speak up.
Ark.
Hark at what? I can't hear anything.
Not hark. Ark. I'm making an ark.
Oh, yes, an ark, you say. Well, that explains it all then. He's building an ark.
That's what it said to me, but I still don't understand.
Neither do I. What's the ark, Noah?
Sort of a boat.
A boat? You did say a boat? What? Here in your backyard on the edge of town?
Yes, a boat here in my backyard on the edge of town.
I always said it was crackers.
You always said he was odd. I was the one who said he was crackers. Touched in the head.
Why are you building an ark, this boat thing, then?
God told me to.
What? What?
God told me to.
It's big, isn't it? How'd you know how big to build it, then? I don't know. Did God tell you how big?
That's right. How did you know?
Just an educated guess.
Are you going to ride it up and down on the sand dunes?
I play sailors in your backyard.
I'll be a whale if you want me to, Noah. let's be serious for a minute. Where are you going to find all the water to float it? In the bath in your house?
God told me it rained so hard that the whole world would be underwater. He also told me to take my family and some animals.
had my brain for hundreds of years.
Oh, you are so funny, Noah. I haven't laughed so much for a long time. Rain enough to flood the world indeed. Wait till I tell the rest of the town. Very good. Ha ha.
Hey, it's starting to rain. Is this it now? The end of the world is nigh. What do we do?
Right, I'm off. This rain's gonna ruin my hairdo.
All right, see you then, Noah. Noah and his family, and it took them many years to build the ark God had asked. Finally, it was completed. Meanwhile, God spoke to all the animals and told them of the coming danger and that they must go to the safety of the ark where Noah's family would care for them. So, as Noah and his family were putting the last of their supplies aboard the ark, an astonished cry arose.
What?
Looking towards the horizon, they could see a long parade of animals headed straight for them.
Ooh, meow.
There were rabbits and dogs, lions and bears, pigs and sheep, and birds of all kinds. And Noah and his family and all the animals and birds were safely inside. God closed the big door. 7 days passed, and it did not rain. Outside, the sun shone brightly.
I have a son.
Noah!
What?
Where's all the rain? What? You comfortable in there? All that dry land inside the ark?
Thunder crashed with a frightening, deafening sound. Rain started to fall and kept falling night and day without stopping. The water began to rise, covering the grass. And then the trees, higher and higher. For 40 days and 40 nights, the rain fell. But Noah, his family, and the animals were safe and dry. Finally stopped, Noah opened the window, but he could see nothing but water. No hills or mountains, just water as far as the eye could see. For 150 days, they floated. Then, one day, Noah set a dove free.
Fly land, find land, little dove.
But she came back tired, for she had no place to land.
Aww.
A week later, Noah sent out the dove again.
All right, go find us some dry land.
When the dove did return, in her beak was an olive leaf she had picked from a tree.
Oh.
Seven days later, Noah sent the dove out again.
Go find land, little bird.
But this time, the dove did not return. Noah and his family wondered when they would be on dry land and God would open the door for them. One morning, as the sun rose brightly in the sky, the water was gone and everyone was awakened by a loud creaking noise.
Creak.
Slowly, the large door of the ark opened.
Noah and his family joyously released the animals and all headed for the dry land. To remind us to listen to God, to be kind and generous to our neighbors, just as God has promised to be kind and patient with each one of us. All right, the end.
Right. Thank you for listening. Any of you kids, can any of you think of any lessons to get from the story of Noah? It's okay, you can say anything you would like. Any thoughts? That's okay. We didn't exactly state any in the skit. But, yeah, I guess we can learn, one thing we can learn from it is that God takes care of his people, and he'll never break your promise, break his promises to you, no matter how far you run from him. So, I think we're going to move on to the next part, so you guys can all get up and go back to your parents.
So thank you for that, and thank you for not making me help. I'd like to just have a few comments and state a few items of interest I found when I was studying on this subject. I'm not going to classify it really as a topic, just maybe have a few questions and ask for a few answers, and then maybe you boys can help me out on some answers, and we'll see how we get along. You know, it was about 4,500 years ago when the earth saw the greatest disaster it had ever seen. It wiped out the whole complete human population except Noah and his wife, his three sons and their wives. Everybody else died. And I did a little research, you know, how many people was that? What are we talking about here? Was it thousands, hundreds, millions? What was it? All the Bible says is they all perished but eight. That's all the Bible says. I don't have the name of this mathematician, but there were several different ones, and they kind of agreed on the formula they used. They agreed that back then, prior to the flood, the population growth was probably much more rapid than today's growth, just simply because everybody lived a lot longer. And they had many, many more children. So there would have been generations coexisting. Instead of generations dying off and new ones, they all stayed living for long periods of time. From Adam to Noah was 1,656 years, approximately. If we assume for this period an average population doubling time of 74 years corresponding to today's rates, then about 10.9 million people lived on the earth at that time, just figuring today's growth rates. Now, if you move beyond that is where you get into the murky area. There's no way of really knowing, but they all agreed that probably if you figure in the extra years they lived and the extra children and all that, probably there were as many people on earth then as there are now. There's no way of knowing, but that's, I thought it was interesting. So this was a huge, huge disaster. some lessons we can take from Noah. Number one, God hates sin. I don't think God enjoyed destroying the earth with a flood, but he hates sin so much. And Noah lived in a society that was sinful to the core. People's thoughts were continually wicked, their hearts were corrupt, their imaginations were evil, and it grieved God, so he decided to destroy the world with a great flood. We find it hard to appreciate this aspect of God's character. But God hates sin. If I am to be more like God, I must hate sin and love righteousness. Number two, God's patience is limited. He is long-suffering, forbearing, patient. For 120 years, Noah preached for people to repent, but there came a time when God's patience ended. The door was shut. I don't think we can begin to comprehend the amount of ridicule he took in those 120 years. Nobody had ever heard of anything like that, so it's just hard to imagine, but he probably put up with a lot. Today, God patiently waits for us to come to him, but time will end, the Lord will return, and the door will be shut. Number three, God demands obedience. God told Noah to build an ark out of gopher wood. He gave exact specifications. I don't suppose that ark would have floated if Noah would have built it the way he wanted to, if he would have made it longer or shorter or higher, or maybe if he even if he would have used a different kind of wood, it probably wouldn't have floated. Obedience. God demands obedience. Faith motivated Noah to obey and build it exactly. No additions, no subtractions. The life lesson is simple. Faith works. Faith acts, faith obeys. Faith does exactly what God says. Number four, God punished the disobedient. Other people could have boarded the ark too. There was plenty of room. I think, I don't know about 7 billion people though. That kind of shoots that theory in the foot, I guess. But there would have been room on the ark for anybody that would have chose to be on there. Noah preached for 120 years for people to repent, but they chose not to. So what happened to those outside the ark? They were lost. And number five, God blesses the righteous person. Noah found favor with God because he was a righteous man, and he influenced his family to be godly. How do we know he influenced his family to be godly? Any of you have an answer to that? How do we know that his family was godly also? Because they believed him and they went into the ark with him. And they were rewarded. Do you think Noah was ridiculed for his righteousness? Do you think the reward Noah got was worth the ridicule? Probably was, yeah. Some questions I came across. Now, if we think of something of that magnitude, we can't explain it. We can't figure it out scientifically. We can't reason it out. But it's interesting to just approach it one question at a time and just kind of see where it takes us. And it's really not that unbelievable you can see how God used nature and things that were already here to fulfill his purposes, just like he does today. Where did the water come from? Where did all the water come from to cover all the earth? Anybody have an idea? Arlen?
It came down from the sky, and then the fountains from the deep just opened up and flooded everything.
The first one that is mentioned, it says the fountains of the deep. So it would almost seem like that was the primary source, maybe, the fountains of the deep. That would have to have come from within the earth, and we know, even today, we know that science tells us that there is a lot of water inside the earth today. In fact, when a volcano erupts, 70% or more of the matter that comes out of the volcano is usually water or steam, which there's a lot of water down below the Earth's crust. And so it could have been just an eruption of underground volcanoes releasing the underground stream. And when the waters came up and out of the Earth, well, we know what happens, or what they tell us happens, when fracking takes place. The oil comes out and leaves a cavity, and it causes unrest in the Earth. Something has to fill that cavity. It causes shifting. Now, if we think of the magnitude of water that was involved in the Great Flood, there would have been a lot of activity in the Earth's geographical features. Probably nothing on the whole Earth was the same feature after the flood that it was like before the flood. Something had to take place. If the waters came out of the deep and left those cavities, something had to happen. Everything changed. And then the second one that is mentioned is the windows of heaven. I didn't have time to look this up, but was that the first time it rained, according to the Bible? Was when the great flood was the first time it rained? So where hills are now, where hills were are now plains, and where mountains were is now depth of ocean. So then, where did the waters go? After the flood, waters receded. Where did they go? If the whole earth was reshaped and those cavities had filled up and flattened out, where did the water go? Psalms 104, verse 5 through 10 mentions some of these things. It suggests that the valleys sank down and the mountains rose. Today, nearly 70% of the earth's surface is water. It's covered with water. The ocean is extremely deep. I think it's up to 10 miles deep in places. Correct me if I'm wrong, teachers. If the earth topography were changed to level, saying there were no, if the elevation was same all the way around the world, there would be 1.7 miles of water over the whole earth. So I'm very thankful that we have those deep holes in the ocean. It's a good place for the water to be. But they figured out that there is enough room in those deep parts of the ocean to hold enough water to cover the whole earth 1.7 miles if it were flat. And remember, before the flood, it could have been a lot flatter. How could the ark hold so many animals? There are over 1 million species of animals today. Well, if we just take it one at a time, the vast majority of the animals are capable of surviving in the water, including mammals such as whales, seals, porpoises, reptiles, amphibians, and so forth. And I think when we think of all the different species, probably a lot of them came from one parent species. I'm thinking, for example, hogs. When I was a boy, about 50 years ago, we'd get together and butcher hogs. And the one thing that really stands out to me is the lard. The fat on the hog was an important part of the process. In fact, there used to be probably about as many containers of lard standing around as meat. 50 years ago, the hogs, if you fatten a hog, he was just about as round as he could be. He was short. He had short legs. And people didn't know better. They just thought that's the way it is. And so you utilize what's there. Well, in the 50 years since, hog breeders have been breeding for different characteristics. And you would almost not recognize it to be the same species. Those hogs are long and they're lean. They have wide, meaty structures. There's very little back fat on them in just 50 years' time. And interestingly enough, if a pig reverts to the wild, in just a few pig generations, that pig is going to start developing a long snout. He'll start developing a razor back and long, thin legs. So in, if we're thinking in terms of 4,500 years, I'm thinking that pair of pigs that went to the ark might have been a pretty small animal. You know, they were the parent of all the pigs, but they weren't necessarily 800-pound sows. Same could be applied to horses. 50 years ago, when we used draft horses, they were stocky, they were short-bodied, they had short legs that were powerful, they were bred to work and to be durable. And since then, they have been breeding up perching horses to be show animals. They stand 18 hands tall, they have long legs, they raise their feet way up when they walk, run. They hold their head way up here. They're almost not recognizable to be the same animal, so. You know, probably that pair of horses that went into the ark might have been a pair of Shetland ponies. And over the years, they have been bred in different ways to reflect different characteristics. A lot of these ideas came from Ken Ham. That's kind of the way he explains things. And another interesting thing was how were the animals gathered? How did they know to come? What Noah did was hard enough. It took him 120 years to build an ark. Well, maybe it didn't take that long, but he took that long to do it. But it seems to me like even an even harder task was how did these animals come from all across the country? How did they know that it was time? Two things. God probably used their migratory instincts. We've all observed that an animal, or a geese in the fall or in the spring. How do they know it's time to go, and how do they know where to go? They have a migratory instinct within them. And also, animals have a sixth sense. A lot of animals have a sixth sense. They know when there's something wrong. They know when there's danger coming, and they seek a place of safety. You've all heard about rats leaving a ship that's going to sink. If a ship's in the harbor, going to sink on that voyage, sometimes the rats will come off when it's at the dock because they sense that something's going to happen to that ship. It's something God has placed in them, so I don't think it was hard for God at all to use those instincts and senses and just guide them straight to the ark where there was a place of safety. Another question, how did Noah and his family take care of so many animals? It was probably dark inside that ark. It was probably dark and it had to be full. It had to be fairly crowded with animals. Ken Ham says that probably some hibernated inside because it was dark and warm. Or they may have even taken on some form of dormancy where they didn't take much care or didn't take much feed. And as far as taking care of all the livestock waste, the manure, Micah, you know what that's all about, don't you? That would have been a huge issue, but I was thinking about that and I thought, well, look at all the water supply they had. Maybe they had flush gutters, you know, just open the valve and whoosh it right on out. That might not have been a problem at all. I think God had a plan for everything. Everything was orderly and it went the way he had designed it. Another question, how did the plants survive? You know, if the whole earth was under this great flood of water for about a year, how did the vegetation survive? I'm not sure how all that worked, but I know that seeds can be almost indestructible. They might have been preserved in the carcasses of the large herbivores that had drowned some seeds. I know that if you move a building that has been setting for 100 years and the ground appears to be sterile when you move it, the first time it rains, it'll turn green. And seeds that have lain dormant for 100 years will start growing. In fact, recently, they found some seeds in Siberia that they claim were thousands of years old and they were still germinating. It was some kind of a tree, I think maybe a pine tree of some kind. So seeds are almost indestructible, and as soon as they can lie dormant, as soon as they hit the right temperature, they'll start sprouting and start growing. So I don't think that was a hard thing for God at all to recreate the vegetation. Lots of lessons we could take from Noah. It's just a fascinating story that has been preserved and written down for us. In closing here, I would like to leave you with, I saw a poster that said, all I needed to know, I learned from Noah's Ark. I'm just going to read these. Some are excellent. Some are a little bit hard to apply. You need to be creative. But I just invite you to take one home and apply it to yourself. The first one is, don't miss the boat. I'm not going to speak a lot about them. I'll just read them, basically. Number two is, remember that we are all in the same boat. Number three, plan ahead. It wasn't raining when Noah built the ark. Number four, stay fit. When you're 600 years old, someone may ask you to do something really big. And let's just break that down. If, 600 out of 900, that would be 60 out of 90. So if you're 60 years old, keep yourself fit, keep yourself prepared. You may have a task yet. Number five, don't listen to critics. Just get on with the job that needs to be done. Number six, build your future on high ground. Number seven, for safety's sake, travel in pairs. Be creative. Number eight, speed isn't always an advantage. The snails were on board with the cheetahs. Number nine, this one is Joe Yoder here. I thought about him. This is for Joe and me. When you're stressed, float a while. Number 10, remember the ark was built by amateurs. The Titanic was built by professionals. If God builds it, it will last. Number 11, no matter the storm, when you are with God, there is always a rainbow at the end. Thank you. That's all I have. We'll have a song at this time. And then a closing prayer.